My name is Tenglo Sontre. This is Working Projects, which is part of European Project Semester at Oslo and Akershus University College. This first lecture is about what a project is, or more or less what a project can be. I work on projects like this, mostly, technology in education. But this is the first time that I'm actually holding this kind of flipped classroom education. So please bear with me as I try out multiple setups for video studios and how to make lecture recordings. I will say that projects are preferable when the task is highly different from what the organization usually do. So if you have something that is kind of strange, it's temporary, it's limited in time, it's the first instance, one-off, then you go for a project. When you do something repeatedly, then often, or hopefully all the time, the organization is well-suited to handle that and you don't need to make a project. Now, builders, they often do every build as a project. Even if they are making one house after the other, they choose to make it as a project each time because it's limited in scope, it has a defined end, and every time they build a new house, it may involve different people, both within the organization and external, so contractors, for example. So a project should be fenced off from other tasks and the organization as a whole. If something is deeply integrated, then maybe projects are not the best solution. And I would say that projects are preferable when there's a high level of uncertainty. So my experience is that if you have a task in your daily life, work life at all means, that is quite uncertain how to reach that goal, how to achieve that end result, then maybe you should create a project out of it to state the end result, the wanted end result, as a mission. And you should start to define goals, and you should see then, okay, who will I involve and how will I involve them? Because if it's uncertainty, it will usually mean that you do not know exactly who will participate in the task. So maybe this task will need you to work outside the usual hierarchy, the usual organizational structure. The picture shows something that has happened multiple times this summer, unfortunately. Norwegian sheep, they graze in the mountains. If people bring dogs and they let the dogs run free, sometimes the dogs chase the sheep far distances, and sometimes they have scared them over cliffs. So here we have actually two sheep, but one is in particular difficult to reach. The question now is, do we climb up or down and try to carry it on our back? Do we climb up and rappel it down? Do we climb down and hoist it up, or do we use a helicopter to hoist it up, or do we just accept that this sheep is lost and better to shoot it than to let it suffer? That is certainly not routine for the farmer or the shepherd. This is an exception, and it's not necessarily a project, but it's certainly something different. Now, this course in project work is not about the highly routine and predictable projects, like I mentioned building houses. So this is not about building house number 99. Neither is it about highly complex projects that demand a strong oversight, monitoring and management control. For that matter, health and safety concerns. Any project with a health and safety concern will require this strong oversight of some kind. Rather, this course is about projects as a solution to situations that are, as I said, different from what the organization usually handles. Now, projects can be goal-oriented or they can be goal-seeking. A a goal-oriented project has a problem, and a goal-oriented project has a problem that's given and the question is given. This is quite common. Now, a goal-seeking project has a defined problem, but from that problem, you haven't been able to find the right question. Okay? Asking the right question is quite often very important. So a goal-seeking project is what you have when you have a problem, but you have to find the right question to ask. And that's quite common in creative businesses. So, for example, you need to have seating. The problem is how to fill a space with goal-seeking projects are quite common in creative businesses. I think we'll get back to that. Now, goal-oriented projects, as I said, define missions and goals. They have, because they have defined the questions. Or you may ask a little better. Now, goal-oriented projects, as I said, you have defined the problem and you have an idea about the questions to ask. So you have defined mission and goals. Still, it is uncertain, unclear how to reach that goal. It may even be uncertain if it's feasible to reach the mission, to accomplish the mission. But there are other tools for planning and monitoring. So we have a methodology that you can decide before the project starts. Now, with goal-seeking projects, you have a defined mission, but you may have undefined goals. Comes from the goal-seeking. So you need to define the goals or goal as part of the project. Now, with undefined goals, you have you have uncertainties. So for example, who should participate? Sometimes you will be able to have people from outside. So you have consultants, for example. You have a budget for that. Quite often you have to look around you who are available in the organization, and you'll start with people close to you, most likely in the same department, for example, and then you may have to involve others in some capacity later on. But that will often in a goal-seeking project be unclear at the beginning, which makes it a bit more difficult to get acceptance from your superior, I would imagine. Now, and it's also unclear, often in a goal-seeking project, how long it will take. Then on the other hand, you may be tasked with getting the goals ready before the start of the budget process. So, for example, for the budgetary process for next year's budget, we need to have a clearly defined project. So we have a goal-seeking project to make a feasibility study, for example, to find out, okay, what will that project be? What will be the budget? What should be the scope, for example, of a new project? So, some examples. Now, improving workplace satisfaction in an open plan office area. Think cubicle space. That would be goal seeking. What can we possibly do here to make people more satisfied? What is the discontent? Then you may end up with saying, all right, if they had some offices and more meeting spaces, for example, all right, okay, then the goal-oriented project coming out of that goal-seeking project would be, for example, design an office space with activity-based workplaces. Now, you may have, as one of our building societies, a goal-seeking project, increase interaction between neighbors in a residential area. They ended up with the solution, we need a phone app that let people share items. So the goal-oriented project would be then, all right, how do we create and for whom do we create a phone app that lets neighbors share items like wheelbarrows? So, for example, what are a neighborhood? And is it members only, or can people who are not members of this building society use it, for example? That would be part of a goal-oriented project. A goal-seeking project for us has been how to increase use of student workspaces throughout campus. For example, you will mostly use Pilstredet 35 at the southern end of the campus, but there are new good workspaces for students at the northern end of campus, Pilstredet 52. So we ended up with needing a campus guide, and that became a goal-oriented project, which I hope to complete very soon. And that is to introduce a new web-based campus map, which is called Maze Map. So mazemap.com should help you find study areas. Sometimes the projects are feasibility studies before the real project starts. So I mentioned this in the budgetary process. In Norway, we call them forprojekt, pre-projects. So when a lot is unknown and there may be a lot of dissent, for example, a political touchiness about the project, you may want to do a pre-project. So a feasibility study are goal-seeking projects that are broad in theme, but they're quite narrow in scope because they have a clearly defined mission. They need to understand what are the possibilities, cost, obstacles for this future project. So you have an idea about what the future project will be, but before the you can make a budget for this project, you need to actually have a feasibility study that say, is it at all possible to do this within our context, within our organization, for example. Now, if you go to the more Norwegian or Scandinavian pre-project, that is quite often also about creating a shared understanding. So we have a lot of possible stakeholders. Okay, I've written shareholders here, but I meant stakeholders. You need to get all the trolls into the light. You need to get all the people to the table and get all the dissent and all the possible conflicts out in the open. So these pre-projects are quite often very inclusive. And hopefully the end result will be a real project that is more exclusive, that may tell some of the participants in the pre-project that you are not a primary stakeholder in the project that we are now creating. We have listened to you, we have heard what you have to say, and maybe you will be able to give input before the final report is written on the project, but you are not part of the core group or the primary stakeholders. We'll get back to stakeholder analysis later on. So, the hoops you go through in a project. You need to define a mission and, of course, get acceptance for that mission statement. You need to define your goals and the scope and the resources required. And you need to find the project members. You should certainly look at the strength of the different project members and see if you need to add on external consultants, for example, and try to get a budget for that. You should always make a project plan, even if it is a small project and you do not feel the need to involve your manager, project owner very much, then you should make a project plan for yourself. And before you start any project, of course, get acceptance of your superiors for that project plan. Now, the hoops you go through in this course. Of course, define the mission, and you have to write and hand in that mission statement. There are the goals and the scope, and you should also, well, you must also analyze the project members' strength. You need to leverage that difference in the project group, the different strengths, to create the best possible project. Because in real life, yes, you need to reach a particular goal. This is not real life as such. This is a course. You are here to learn. So you really need to look at what are the strengths in the project group and create the best project based on that. If not, why should we believe that you are able to use your organization when you get out in a real job? Now, I'm going to ask you to make a project plan with a Gantt diagram. So even if you know that you will have to revise that Gantt diagram almost immediately after you leave class, I need a Gantt diagram so that you show me that you can do it. And you may choose not to have the Gantt diagram in the final project report, but you must show us that you can make a Gantt diagram, because that is a very good tool in many projects, and it's a good tool in most projects that you will have in your work life. So that is rather important. It didn't fit in anywhere else, so I just wanted to say something about defined and agile projects. Now, the classical projects, they have methodology that is well suited to increase predictability and use tools that enable control, for example, cost control, time control. Now, agile projects, they focus on different things. The classical projects came out of, for example, the military and from NASA and so on. Agile projects come more from software development. You, for example, have Scrum and Lean. Now, agile projects focus more on individuals and interactions rather than the processes and the tools. So we have small-scale projects that can focus on individuals. If you create airplanes, of course, that is such a complex process that you need to have a certain focus on the processes. Now, agile projects, coming from software development, focus on working software, software that can be used, rather than comprehensive documentation. Of course, NASA sending in someone to the moon, they need comprehensive documentation every step of the way. This one is rather odd. Customer collaboration over negotiation. I think that's partly cultural. My limited experience with activities in the United States was that things were rather contractual. So you needed a lot of negotiation whenever there was the need for change. In Scandinavia, we are certainly used to customer collaboration. So this becomes an issue when we have outsourcing. So I know a software company that has tried outsourcing to India, for example, and they experienced a lot of negotiation, but lack of this customer collaboration that they were used to from an outside contractor. Now, responding to change or following a plan, more of the same, actually. If the relationship between the project group and the customer or the organization is very contractual, then, of course, you have to follow the plan, stick to the plan, while in a more agile focus, you have changes in the life of a project. Almost all projects experience something that changed the conditions. And in an agile project, you focus on actually responding well to those changes. And you focus less on what was actually planned. Most projects I have worked on are mixed. Call them hybrids or bastards. Right, that was it. I'll see you in class. I hope you enjoyed this short lecture. And I'll hope you enjoy the others as well. As a sign off, I can mention this. That's the book I use, mostly because I needed to make sure that I used one set of terminology throughout. So this I chose because it's also a good book if you are rather new and inexperienced. There are certainly good books for the more complex projects and the high-skilled project manager. Right, that was it.